Hey there, and welcome to another episode of The Walk. It is a Monday morning. It's exactly 10 a.m. So I'm heading out the door a little bit earlier than usual. I tend to record these episodes after lunchtime, but today, before I started my workday, I looked at the weather forecast, and apparently at noon, this current weather that we have with clouds and patches of blue sky and some sunshine is radically going to change. And there's even a code yellow. So you've got a yellow, orange, and red as a warning for traffic, people who work outside, because apparently we're going to have a massive storm front coming from the UK and going to cover the Netherlands for the rest of the day. We're going to have hail, thunderstorms, lots of wind. So that necessitated a slight change of plans. And I wanted to catch some of that nice sunshine early in the morning because I know it's good for my vitamin D production. It's good for my overall mood. Sunshine, bright light early in the morning usually helps a lot in getting my energy levels up. So that's why I'm walking here in the midst of this graveyard, because it's very close to where I live, in case you've not listened to previous episodes. And I'm heading to the woods, which actually reminds me of something. I was listening to a writer who was also a cartographer. That's the wonderful thing about social media. Nowadays, you come across the most interesting people. And so this lady said that as a cartographer, it's often struck her that beginning writers never name their forests. She says, well, they will often draw a map, because, well, Tolkien did that with Middle Earth, and they like to map out this is about fantasy writers, to map out the world in which their stories are going to take place. But she said you can always tell when someone is not versed in cartography or is a beginning writer, because they will have large patches of their imaginary countries or worlds that are unnamed. And that's so unlikely, because people tend to give names to places, especially before the dawn of GPS. People needed to know in which woods they were walking around. They couldn't say, well, hey, I'm going to this castle, it's in the woods. It's like, well, which woods? Is it the dark forest? Is it is the castle in the Frieze Plains? Is it going to be in the dangerous desert? And that actually gave me an idea of maybe starting to name the environments here in my own area. Give them my own names. I'm pretty sure that the woods where I usually record this episode of The Walk are just very boringly called the Woods of Bennekom. And Bennekom is the town where I live. But somehow I don't think that's appropriate. These woods are so lovely. They're so much, you know, a world in itself. It's, for me, it's a place where I rest, where I think, where I listen to audiobooks, oftentimes fantasy books as well. It these woods always awaken my inner hobbit, and so maybe I should think about a more appropriate name for these woods, so I can mention them in those names in the podcast, and you know what kind of what area I'm walking around in. Anyway, that's a little aside. You may be able to tell, but I have my voice is a little bit raspy, and this is because last week I've been very sick. It's been a quite intense week, because on Thursday I had my television work, and this time we had to prepare for two interviews. So this is the first time that we are filming four interviews on one day. Of course, this is all so we can be as cost efficient as possible. So we were two presenters and four hosts, one location. So they basically need to hire one person for makeup and two people for the camera crew, camera and sound. So that saves them quite a bit. It did mean for me that I had to prepare a little bit more. It was a bit more strenuous. And I had been visiting John last week. I spoke briefly about it. And ever since I came back from Tilburg, I had a bit of a sore throat, a bit of a cold, not sure exactly. I thought, this will go over. Not a problem. I'll just stay calm. But it didn't. It got worse and worse. And on a Thursday, Thursday morning, I wake up, have to leave home very early because all the preparations start usually very early on a shooting day like that. And I had to travel to a location that I hadn't been to before. And when I arrived, I just felt I had a sore throat and a headache. So I took a paracetamol and powered through the day. And I don't think that that you can tell on TV that I was not feeling well. But then when I came home, I was just wiped out. I was way more tired than I usually am after a day of work like that. I had a headache that went all around my head. And so it's probably a combination of this lingering cold that was getting worse, plus the tension of the day, the concentration, the focus that you have, and something that I want to address a little bit later on in this episode of The Walk. It's also this effort of stepping into a role, of becoming a certain person, not someone else, but a certain version of yourself. In this case, I have to be the very focused, interested, nice, kind interviewer who puts his guest on at ease so that and asks the right questions so that the conversation opens up, which is, I have to say, even a bit more strenuous when you already have a headache, when you're already not feeling very well. So at the end of the day, I was so tired. And then the next day, I was looking forward to spending the evening with a couple of friends playing board games. We rarely do this. We have this at very irregular intervals. So once every 2 months, 3 months sometimes, depending on our schedules. And it's always something I'm looking forward to. For me, it's one of my favorite activities to do with friends, is to play board games. I never really have the opportunity to play with other people in person. So we do have our D&D group in the Discord, but that is, of course, via Zoom. Or via, what are we using? I think we're just using the internal Discord video. I have the online video games that you play together, but then you just see each other's avatars and you talk over Discord. But it's a very different experience from board games. So I was looking forward to it, hoping that, you know, with a good night's sleep, I'd be feeling much better than on Thursday. But unfortunately, the opposite was true. I woke up with a splitting headache after a very bad night of sleep. I can always tell because I keep my Apple Watch on, so it gives me a very detailed graph of how often I've been moving around, what my heart rate was, my breathing, and it can more or less estimate whether I was in deep sleep or superficial sleep or regular sleep and REM sleep, where you're dreaming. And what I could tell, like, the whole thing looked like my night had been through the cheese grater. There were all these tiny little spikes, and it went from red to purple to blue to red to, like, I'd been waking up at least 30 times during that night, which of course I had forgotten about, but my Apple Watch explained why I was feeling so miserable on Friday. And my initial thought was, gosh, I'm going to take it slow, but I hope I'm feeling better this evening because I really want to go and play board games with my friends. Although in the back of my mind, a probably more wiser Father Roderick told me, that's not a good idea. You know, you're really sick. And not only will this be a massive drain on your energy, but if you're contagious, you might also impact your friends. They might get a cold. But I just didn't want to listen to that voice. And there was something else that I noticed, and that is during the day, when things didn't get better, and I felt so bad that at one point I just went back to bed, and well, I couldn't really sleep because of the headache, and I was starting to cough also a little bit, but I was constantly telling myself, oh, come on, you're faking it, you're trying to find a pretense not to go because you're still tired of yesterday, but put yourself together, and you know this is important. I was basically gaslighting myself for being sick. And this is an interesting thing, that because it's a mechanism that has been part of my life for most of my younger years and adult life, that very often I would criticize myself for basically being myself, for being sick, for not feeling well, for being grumpy. And every time when I felt like I was not corresponding to my own internal norms, like my own ideal of how I should be and how I should feel and what I should do, I would just push myself over my boundaries. I would not accept my own assessment that I was, for whatever reason, not exactly in you know, 100% in shape or whatever, and I would just push through. I've paid a dire price for that, because I've been, especially in my younger years as a priest, been doing that chronically, where I was always projecting myself to be, also to myself, someone that I'm not. Someone who's always peppy and cheerful and at peace and listening and understanding and full of things to say and questions to ask. And I would never allow myself to feel what I actually was feeling on some of these days. And that was, I was just feeling super tired, grumpy, even sick, depressed, anxious, all that. And it led ultimately to a cycle of burnout, where the more I forced myself to push past my own limitations, the worse I felt. And the more I started pushing, and then I felt even worse, and that ended up at the bottom of that spiral with a burnout that lasted for more than 6 months. And took even way longer to fully recover from. Because physically, mentally, you can more or less get your act together, but the overall impact of a burnout can last multiple years, which it did in my case. And so, on Friday, when I was doing this exact same thing that I had done before in my life, like, come on, put yourself together, this is probably a man flu. It's another thing, of course, that does the rounds on social media, that men always have a tendency to exaggerate when they don't feel well, and they complain about it, whereas women, according to this slightly black and white picture, are much stronger and resilient, and they just push through. And especially mothers, you know, they can't afford to be ill, because otherwise the kids would be left alone. And, you know, everybody knows that dads can't take care of kids, so moms always have to be on. And, you know, that actually may be true, that for women it is much harder to allow themselves to be sick or to take some time for themselves. I'm not judging that, but it's a slippery slope. It's very risky if you keep constantly pushing yourself. Sometimes you have to, because there's, well, like Thursday, I had to be there. This is an expensive shoot, and so if I'm not like knocked out completely or on intensive care, I knew I had to be there. I couldn't afford not to be. So, but that's only one day, and so I can push myself for one day as long as I empty out my agenda to recover from that. But it's a totally different thing if you're always pushing yourself over your own limits, if you never respect your own boundaries, and worse, if you feel that you're not even having boundaries. You're making them up. You're pretending to be sick, and of course that is that's even more dangerous, because it can lead to situations where you're so sick that you put your own health in jeopardy if you push through. Not to mention that you may actually impact other people's life by infecting them or whatever. So thankfully, I caught myself and I said, hey, I notice, this is my trick, you know, you take a step back and you describe what you're feeling. This kind of is a continuation of my thoughts on last week's episode of the break, of the walk, if you haven't listened to that one yet, where I shared how I'm learning to sit with my emotions and to observe them with curiosity instead of immediately judging those emotions or trying to numb them or run away from them or being taken over by emotion. So the thing that I told myself is like, hey, I observe that I'm gaslighting myself. I'm telling myself that I am not sick enough to be in bed. This is man flu, etc., etc. Is that true? And then I just sat with that thought for a while, and I just did a quick, what they call body scan, where you just try to focus on how do I really feel physically. And so I noticed, well, no, I still have this literally splitting headache. And this was after I had taken a paracetamol to tone it down a little bit. So I was still having this debilitating headache. That's number one. That was pretty real. And then I had my muscles were aching, which is also a sign of probably a flu or something like that. My body was struggling to keep working. So, you know, body aches. I was coughing. Not much, but I was still felt that, it's not just a painful throat, but it is now starting to affect the lungs. And after that, I realized, now, wait a minute, I am really sick. I'm going to write an email or an app to my friends, and I'm going to tell them that I am sick. I'm not able to go tonight. And I still, while writing the app, I still felt guilty about it, which, of course, is all in my mind. Nobody blames me for being sick. I would always, always understand when someone else would tell me, hey, I have to reschedule because I have the flu or I have a severe cold. I would never say, well, you're probably just faking it. It's probably man flu. Come on, put yourself together. No, I would never do that to my friend. So why do I think that people do that to me? And this time I'm catching it. I'm catching myself in the act, you know, of trying to push myself. And so after having had that correspondence, I could finally let it go. And I knew that the next 2 days of the weekend, I would have to cancel all my plans. My only concern was that I wouldn't be able to do Sunday Mass because, as you know, in the Netherlands, we have a chronic lack of priests, and if I have to cancel Mass at the very last minute, it's going to be a challenge for a local church to, you know, reorganize and come up with something they can do instead. So I didn't want to, unless I was really completely dead. I hoped that if I would take enough rest on Friday and Saturday, I'd be okay or good enough on Sunday morning. And thankfully I was. Saturday I was miserable. I had to skip, you know, running. I didn't do anything on Saturday. I think I just played Diablo 4 or something, like a very easy video game, just to have something to do. Even listening to an audiobook was was too hard, and I didn't want to be in bed for the entire day. So I took it easy, and on Sunday morning, sun was shining, I woke up, and again did an assessment. I think I can do this. So I took my bike, went to Renkum, which is a town, but it's about 20 minutes by bike. I have to go over some hills, but I left a little bit earlier so I could take it easy and then celebrated Mass with the community there. Yeah. And I did all right. I also, because I had slept so badly, and this is still ongoing, I have these very irregular nights, and I don't know exactly what's causing it. I have not had any trouble sleeping for years now, but this past week it's been disastrous, and I don't know what's causing it. Could be several things. I switched my bedroom, actually. So what used to be my bedroom is the smallest room of the house. I reorganized that for my guest, so that's now the guest bedroom. And then I used the middle room in the back of the house as a bedroom. There's something about the configuration of that room that I don't like, and I don't know what it is, but it just, do you ever have that where you're in a space and the space feels wrong? And I don't know what it is. Is it the disposition of the bed? Is it the orientation of the bed? Is it the curtains? Is it something else? I can't pinpoint it, but that particular room, which used to be my bedroom in the past, has always been problematic. And I don't know. I don't want to, you know, give it any. Sometimes people have these elaborate theories that it's about like earth beams and whatnot. I'm way too cynical for that type of thought, but there is definitely something about that room that makes me more, I don't know, I'm very aware of the fact that this room feels wrong to sleep in. And so last night, I changed back. I interchanged it. I was like, okay, the guests can sleep in that middle room. Maybe they will have less problems sleeping there, but I need my old bedroom back. And even though I still didn't sleep that well, it felt better. I know this just sounds very esoteric, but anyway, hopefully switching back to my old bedroom is going to help with that. So on Sunday morning at Mass, the one thing that I told myself, and this is it, we're now getting to the core topic of what I wanted to share with you, is that I was very aware of the fact that I didn't have a homily, because I didn't sleep very well, and when I'm tired and I've been sick, my creativity also is just not there. And so I was taking my bike to church, and even when I arrived, sometimes I will come up with an idea on my bike. And when Mass started, I still didn't have a clue what to talk about in the homily, which of course is, you know, happens from time to time, and I'm experienced enough as a podcaster to just, you know, talk anyway, and something will come out. But it is a bit unsettling. And normally I'd be very tense about that, because I feel always that on Sunday morning, I have to switch myself on. And this is similar to what I do on days where I have to film. You put some effort in to be an optimized version of yourself for that particular task. Wow, that tree made a sound, a very creaking sound, as if it was about to fall on the road. That's scary. Oh well. But I allowed myself, so let's say calm. Worst case scenario, I'm just going to tell my parishioners, hey, I've been very sick yesterday. I'm still not there yet, but I wanted to be here with you, so I don't really have a homily. Let me just look at... That's another creaking sound. Oh, I see what's happening. There's this one tree that has become uprooted, and it's leaning back against other trees, so it didn't fall to the ground, but two other trees are holding it up. And every time the wind blows, this is probably the foreboding the storm that's about to hit us in 2 hours from now, it's moving these other two trees, and it's causing that creaking. It's one tree. it's a friction between those three trees, I suppose. Anyway, I promised myself I'm just going to just not panic about this. I'm not going to try to force a homily. I'm just going to be honest, share my thoughts. And it is a form of... I only recently have acquired the terminology for this. It's a form of unmasking. Masking is a term that is used in psychology for a behavior that is often used by all of us. At one, you know, there are times where you put on a mask. Literally, ooh, little squirrel crossing the road really fast. I love the elegance with the tail just counterbalancing the hopping around. Lovely. The wind is picking up now. Wow. Okay, I should have been aware that a storm front is not just there from 1 minute to another. There's probably already some wind picking up in the hours preceding it. Masking is something you do when you have to present yourself in a certain way. We all have this, for instance, on birthday parties. You know, whether it's for your kids or for yourself or a loved one, you always kind of slightly force yourself a little bit to be extra kind and very hospitable. And, oh, please sit down. Oh, that's a lovely present. And even though it's just a pair of socks, you will still react as if you are Dobby and have just been granted a life of freedom, even though you already have socks. But it's you know, you put on a mask. For certain neurodivergent people, this is something they do all the time, 24/7. Man, it is because, for instance, if you are autistic, you have a much harder time gauging the you know, social interactions, reading the room. It's difficult for certain people with autism, and so they have acquired behavior that masks this inability to read the room. They even, and I know this from good friends of mine who told me this, you just rehearse situations. You look at what other people are saying or doing, and you teach yourself literally, for instance, to do small talk, which is hard if you're on the autism spectrum. And so it's... But if you put on a mask like that, or if you're masking, it does drain energy. It's extra effort because you're constantly aware of the fact that you're actually pretending to be someone that you're not, or at least not fully. I've noticed that I've been doing that for most of my life as well. And I think it is linked to my ADHD tendencies, where I often have to be, I'm like hyper aware of what's happening around me, and there is an aspect of people pleasing that is linked to this. And it's because of this behavior that was not understood probably while I was young, I had to constantly be one step ahead and try to compensate for it. It's also something I've been doing in my own day-to-day life, where knowing how much, you know, my hyperactive brain can derail my life, I've been over focusing, how to say that, like I've been overemphasizing like planning, and my house is always tidy, at least the first floor, not the upper floor, because I don't get guests there. But when people visit me, they always tell me, oh my gosh, your house is so tidy. And it usually is, but it is a form of masking, in a sense that I am presenting my house in a way that it doesn't betray that actually, if it were all up to me, it would be a total mess and a chaos. And as a child, I always had very messy rooms. And my desk was one big pyramid of papers and unfinished projects all over the place. And over time, I've learned how to counteract that. And so I've read books about this. Like, I was always losing my stuff. And I read this book that recommended every single thing in your life should have its own location. So keys should always go in one place. My glasses should always be on the same counter. Things like that. In the kitchen, everything has its own place. So cleaning up is much easier. You don't have to think, where am I going to put this? You just have to remind yourself, oh, this goes there, this goes there. And if you don't have space for specific things, you get rid of them. Or you create space for them. But never leave one single thing in your life, in your household, without its own home. That has been a major game changer in my life. But it's still something I wouldn't do naturally. It's a strategy to cope with this ongoing chaos in my head and me losing stuff all the time. And I do this also in human behavior as well. I know that I have a tendency to talk over people because my mind is always racing. When I'm listening to someone, I'm always like three steps ahead. So someone will start saying something. And this in pastoral situations is quite a handicap. So someone is like, yeah, Father, I'd like to talk about this and this. And then starts a very long-winded exposition of, and then I, like in 2 seconds, I know exactly what that person is going to say. I also know what I want to say. All that is already like processing going on in my head. But at the same time, I know it's extremely rude to talk over someone and to fill in the blanks before they even have the opportunity to finish their phrases. And I've, again, learned, I have mastered over time, patience to just let the other person talk and not show my own impatience. Same thing with how do you come across? I know as a priest, most of the time I'm walking around in my priestly attire, so I'm recognizable as a priest. I also know that oftentimes I am so distracted because in my mind I'm not really, like I could be walking around in the local supermarket completely oblivious of what I'm doing. I'm just there to create a sort of a background for my own thoughts. So while I'm getting my groceries, I'm actually developing the membership community for for my ministry, or I'm thinking about a video that I'm editing, or about an anime TikTok that I would like to post later on. And so this like inner thought life can oftentimes make me completely ignore people, even people that I know very well. And it's only when they say, hello, Father, that I look around. It's like, oh my gosh, sorry, I didn't notice you. Yeah, and then we could tell that you were somewhere else. And I have for a long time always tried to to put a face on to a certain extent. So I know that when I'm in deep in thought, I'm not smiling, I'm not, you know, alert. But I want to be, and I feel I have to be because I'm a priest and I should be kind, etc. And if I walk around in a grumpy way, people will maybe think, oh, that's another priest. So yeah, no wonder he looks grumpy with all everything that's going on in the church, etc. And I don't know, they might pity me, they might hate me for it. Oh, of course, this is all in my mind. Excuse me. the cold is now starting to affect my lungs. This is another reason to record this episode early, because my voice may actually get worse in the next 2 days. So I hope I can get the walkout and the breakout before my voice starts imploding. So oftentimes when I'm outside, knowing very well that I have a tendency to lose myself in my thoughts, I mask. I put on a smile, literally. When I'm walking around, I put on my friendly face. That is literally a mode of my face where I know it's not like I'm not smiling broadly, but I look friendly. But it is a look. It's something I switch on. And this is very different for you. You may know me, of course, from live streams or having met me in person. It's different from Father Roderick is enthusiastic and loves being here. When I'm in London for the Star Wars celebration, I have a huge smile on my face for 3 days in a row. There's nothing fake about that. There's nothing there. I'm not masking there. In fact, I am totally, like, hyper happy there, and how I feel is showing on the outside. I couldn't even put on a mask because I'm so excited for being there. In other circumstances, when it's more performative, and I'm I'm putting on a face because I feel that I have to behave in a certain manner, etc. That is where the energy starts leaking. And so this masking, I do this subconsciously. I'm not even aware of the fact that I'm doing it. I'm trying to get rid of that. I'm not trying to get rid of my enthusiasm. I will still be super excited. Even when I'm recording this podcast right now, as I'm sharing this with you, I've got a big smile on my face. Because, I don't know, there's something ridiculous about this. And it's funny. I don't know. And it's genuine. I'm not pretending to be in a good mood just because I'm recording a podcast. And it's now that I think of it, it's kind of weird that I'm smiling here. I'm walking alone in the woods. There's no one here. It might be the occasional dog owner that sees me. And then usually I do mask and I try to be a bit more subdued so people won't think I'm crazy walking around here with this furry little gray, you know, wind cap on my recorder. But there is this ongoing masking that I try to let go, and it's has to do with what I shared with you last week. You know, sitting with your emotions. It's an acceptance of who you are, and it's acceptance of the fact that sometimes you're sick, you feel sick. Nobody expects you to be, you know, cheerful and peppy, and it's okay to be sick. And in fact, sometimes it's even a good thing to communicate how you feel, how you really feel, because it might help people to empathize with you, or to take care of you. Sometimes it's another thing. I don't need anyone's help. People should know that I'm in trouble or that I need help, because I want to have a grip on my own life. I will do this myself. I have to do this myself. I don't want to need anyone else because it's risky and I have a bad experience with transactional friendship in the past, and every time I need someone, then the other person might take advantage of me, etc., etc., etc. That's all fear-based behavior. I want none of it. So, in church on Sunday, I was completely unmasked. I realized that I was unmasked. I was calm. I started the homily knowing very well that I had nothing prepared. But because I was so in the here and now, I was very present, something happened. And there was one word that I had seen in the readings that I took as a point of departure, and it was joy. So these encounters with Jesus after the resurrection, in some of those stories, joy is mentioned. They were, you know, so out of, they were incredulous out of joy or something like that. And so I started to talk about joy. I'd seen a TikTok video earlier that day of a couple of babies sitting on a couch, and then their favorite television show comes on, and the presenter, a lady, says, "Well, good morning." And then all these babies just break into this huge smile. And I mentioned that, and it's like, well, while I was watching that TikTok video this morning, even though I was not feeling okay, I was a bit sick, I was grumpy, I didn't have any coffee yet, those babies were contagious, and I had a huge smile when I saw that video. And this is how joy works. And so in the gospel, I'm just giving you a very abbreviated version, in the gospel, this joy comes from the encounter with the risen Christ. And that joy is fundamental for the success of the mission. Because Jesus sends them out. But it is a evangelion. So it's glad tidings. It's a happy message. And so how is it that we're often not looking the part? And this is not because we're, because I wanted to advocate masking and faking being joyful. No, this is about being really joyful. This is the kind of joy that I feel when I'm podcasting, or when I'm in a, you know, at a Star Wars convention. It's genuine joy. It's not. It's the opposite of masking. But it means that you have to tap into the sources of this joy. So anyway, I talked a little bit about that, and also about the kind of the opposite of that, where some people have a tendency, and me too, from time to time, to just focus on the negative. It becomes an addiction, and we keep feeding ourselves this negativity, and it becomes unhinged, because obviously we live in a broken world, and there's a lot to worry about. But that's not the only, there are two sides of the medal. There is also a lot to be grateful for, and a lot to be happy with, and accepting reality as it is, instead of trying to force it into what we want it to be, gives peace, gives joy, gives balance, etc. So that was my homily. And I don't know what happened. It was just this, I felt so relaxed, and it felt so natural to share this for, 10 minutes with my parishioners. And then the rest of the Mass too, I was so myself, and I took my time. I didn't change my voice all of a sudden to be, oftentimes I will do that, I will project my voice, which is always a bit, you know, At which point does liturgy become a performance instead of something that you are also partaking in and participating in? This Mass was really beautiful. And then afterwards, there's always the opportunity for parishioners to get together in a small parish room or parish hall, and they will have a cup of coffee and talk. And oftentimes when I'm tired, or when, especially when I'm sick, when I'm not well, I dread that, because it's a lot of people asking me questions, and they want to talk to Father Roderick, the entertainer, who's always funny and always has stories to tell. But I was really tired after Mass. But I told myself, I'm just not going to pretend to be this happy, peppy Father Roderick, always funny, etc. I'm just gonna sit there, We're going to have regular conversations. And if people ask why the energy seems to be gone, I can just tell them, hey, I've been sick yesterday and I've used up my last bit of reserve during Mass. And it worked. It really worked. And this encounter with parishioners that normally is like an additional drain became neutral in terms of energy consumption. And that made me realize that how often in encounters with my parishioners, I am masking and I am forcing myself, I'm pushing myself to be there for them, to listen. And what I notice now is that I can be totally there for parishioners. I had some very deep conversations after Mass last Sunday. But because I didn't force myself to mask, to present a certain side of myself, it didn't drain my energy. Amazing. It's really amazing. I know that this may sound a bit abstract, maybe, to if you have never done this, or if you're just yourself, some people are just very natural. This may sound a bit like, what is he talking about? I can't imagine what that is. But I know that especially neurodivergent people are very familiar with this this phenomenon. And it's good to realize that some people around you may be masking without realizing it and without you realizing it, because their behavior is so normal. This is one of the issues that neurodivergent people struggle with when regular people, neurotypical people, tell them, well, you can't be autistic, you can't have ADHD, you're perfectly normal. In fact, so it can often lead to people not getting diagnosed, or there's just nobody, they don't realize that they are neurodivergent because they've been masking and nobody tells them. And the people around them don't notice it. And if they notice it, they don't understand that this is coming from autism, or, you know, when people have a meltdown, it's because of this accumulation of pressure and stimuli and they need to decompress. I wasn't aware of the fact that I need to decompress at regular times because my mind is always so on. And in addition to the masking, like, I have a huge drain of energy, and maybe it's just a sign that I have a lot of energy to give, that I've been able to do this. But I remember from my earliest youth that I loved being alone in my room and to close the door and put on some music so I wouldn't hear my brother rehearsing piano in the living room. Because it was just too much, and I just wanted to be left alone, and it could be very, I would disappear, a form of hyperfocus, I realize now, in my hobbies. I would draw cartoons, and I would be, and then someone would knock on my door to tell, or it could be my brother or my sister, and I would just have a meltdown, because I was taken out of that hyperfocus, and I just couldn't handle the sudden change of whatever, you know, of circumstances. This behavior was labeled as egotistical. You're selfish. You're very individualistic. You're constantly in your room. It's bad. You know, real people go out there. They're friends with everyone. They go to parties, and you're going to be lonely for the rest of your life. That kind of judgment, that's totally not recognizing the need that neurodivergent people have to decompress and to process. And if you are constantly exposed and you're constantly masking, you will hit rock bottom. And so it's all about balance. Anyway, I understand this now. I wish I would have known this 40, 50 years ago. Would have saved me a lot of guilt and a lot of, you know, these tendencies to constantly criticize myself. Because that's not my voice. It's the voice of the people that would criticize me. Anyway. Long story short, I'm still sick. So on the rest of the Sunday, I didn't do much. I'm getting these podcasts out because in the morning, I usually have a little bit of energy left. So I'm recording this. I'm going to walk an extra mile for my patrons just to give them a heads up on where I am currently with the new website and the membership communities and some other plans that I have. Suffice it to say that... there was this one last thing that I wanted to mention. This is what I'm going to share with you now is what I wanted to put at the beginning of the podcast, but my brain had other plans. Last week with my friend, I had a very deep conversation about what happened to him in seminary. I posted about that on social media. Oh, big doggy. Hey, buddy. Yeah, good boy. All right. Air enthusiaste. Hey, one very big dog and one very small dog. And the big dog saw me and was like, I want to play. Of course, this had to be part of the podcast. No episode of The Walk is complete without dogs, without unruly dogs. At least dogs are not masking. They're totally themselves. I appreciate that. So this has to do with, it's a big story in a sense that he has had a very hard, how do you say this? Very difficult experiences in seminary. Some of the perpetrators, some of the people that caused this, are still walking around. They're still working as priests, and they shouldn't. At least that's my unprofessional opinion. Especially in the diocese of my friend, things are bad. Some of this stuff is coming to light now. It's been occupying my mind a lot. I've seen a lot of dysfunctional priests. Maybe I'm one of them to a certain extent. But I see a lot of people that I think would need therapy, would need to be accompanied and are not. And so they are not just masking to a certain extent, but they are leading a double life, which is an extreme form maybe of masking where you feel that who you are is not moral, and you know this, and yet you cannot stop this behavior. It's not acceptable. It's not what a priest should do. And yet, they pretend to be someone they're not, or they have two sides. They show kind of the good priest. Sometimes they even overcompensate and they become very focused on orthodoxy and the rules and anti-LGBTQ, etc. And it's sometimes it's like acting out. It's their own struggle with their own identity or how they feel or how they behave that they have to somehow numb and show the world that they're not like that because they're actually very afraid of who they are or who they have become. And so I'm very sad about that because it seems to be so prevalent. We're not talking about like a few cases. In this situation, it's many priests. And the church seems to be unable to acknowledge what is going on. Although they know, but they don't know how to handle it. Or maybe they are just thinking that with love and compassion, this will all go over. Or maybe, you know, people should get a second chance or a third chance. We've learned through all the scandals in the church, you have to be very careful in those situations that you're not protecting people that are a danger to themselves and to their parishioners and to possible victims. Out of so-called mercy. Mercy and love sometimes requires action, requires truth, requires confrontation, requires measures to make sure that these people get help. And if they don't want to be helped, that they at least cannot endanger other people and damage other people. And if you don't do that, the damages are going to be tremendous. And look at the Catholic Church all over the world. It is a total mess. It's the Titanic sinking because of all this inaction. And also what apparently we have taught priests. And that is, you can only be a priest in a very well-defined way. And if you cannot live that life, then you just fake it and hide, and people fight. This is a big, big issue. And it's only now coming to light. It makes me worried. It makes me sad. I have tremendous compassion with the victims, because oftentimes they are also forced to stay silent. They have to pretend that nothing happened. Anyway, I could do a whole podcast about this. I won't. But it's just to show you that if you, for whatever reason, struggle with issues in life and need help, try not to mask, but try to get help. Try to find ways to become who you are called to be, so that you avoid either having a double life, pretending to be someone who you are not, because that creates so much stress and tension, takes away so much of who you are called to be. And so get help, and that should lead to, ultimately should, hopefully that will lead to self-acceptance. And self-acceptance is only—it's just another word for looking at you the way God looks at you. With acceptance, with mercy, but also with truth. And with the desire to help you overcome whatever is blocking you in life, whatever makes you unhappy, and wants to heal the wounds in your life. Aberrant behavior is never because a person just wants to be evil. It's always a sign, a symptom of deep trauma, of hurt, of unresolved issues, of whatever. There's so many reasons. But those reasons need to be seen and acknowledged, and if possible, treated. And if you don't, if you just leave things and or you just wish them away, it's not going to help anyone. This is why sometimes I talk about these things here on the walk. Because it's also a mirror for myself. Like, who do I want to be? And can I fully accept myself? And if I don't, if I mask, if I pretend to be someone else, it's understandable, but it's not good. Because it means I still have some way to go. I still need healing. I still need to be more at peace with myself. And the more I am, the more I actually can mean to other people. Anyway, I'm just going to stop this long this long chain of thought with you. It's a little bit much at the end of an episode of The Walk. But thank you so much for sticking around and listening to this. And we'll probably come back to this topic in one of the future episodes of The Walk. So, God bless, and we'll talk soon.